you know, because I'm not going to use the same piece of software 2 weeks in a row.
No, of course not. You don't. I don't think you've done anything for this recording the same 2 weeks in a row.
I've lost recordings 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, that you have. Like last week. So, I mean, yeah. But it's okay. I patched it together. I'm pretty good about that.
You are very good at it.
That's why I record your audio and my audio.
I'm a consistent screw up.
It's okay. We'll get you right eventually. One day you'll finally just be like, okay, Matt, I'll go buy a MacBook Pro.
No, I'm never going to do that, but I'll probably just switch to Linux and move on with life.
Yeah, of course. And then until you get tired of that and you switch a week later. So, and then we play this game all over again.
ADD. It's a curse.
It's fine. It keeps me on my toes. Nothing's ever the same. I mean, because, you know.
I'm sure your toes hurt.
Because, you know, Apple doesn't care about the Mac, so it's like I don't have to do anything different on my end. Everything just stays the same. It's pretty stagnant. I may get an update here and there.
And then I'm on the bleeding edge so bad that my Chromebook decided that it's just going to bite itself. And yeah.
But it happens.
It does happen.
But you know what you can do while you're waiting for your Chromebook to start back up? You can listen to an audiobook from Audible. Do you like that? You like that transition?
I like that.
We're going to start with the ad first because we're going to try to jump into some things. But if you go to audibletrial.com/educatingtech, you can get a 30-day free trial that comes with a free audiobook of your choice from their catalog of over 180,000 titles. I really think it's more than that personally, but I wonder if it does like Netflix where it like rotates things in and out.
I don't know. I guess they do have to deal with publishers, so they probably do have the same kind of problems.
But it's crazy, though, because if you buy a book, it's yours, whether you cancel your subscription or keep paying or what. I mean, you always have that to be able to download. So I don't know. Maybe they are rotating. Maybe not. I don't know. But I don't know.
But
I like the service.
You get to keep it forever.
Yeah, it's a really good service. I think I'm up to like 60-something books in my library. It's crazy.
And I really love the service. And I've listened to a couple. There's one book. I'm not going to say what book it is. Because y'all already think I'm weird, but I think I've listened to it 8 times.
That's a lot. I'm going to see Avengers: Infinity War for the third time tomorrow, so maybe I can beat your book record with Avengers movie seeing.
Not on MoviePass though, right?
Yeah, not on MoviePass. Audibletrial.com/educatingtech. And I will say this: I actually listened to your pick from last time. And it was really good. I mean, it was every bit as good as what you said it was. In fact, I have got the two sequels too, and so I'm gonna listen to those as well.
Now, here's my question for you: how much sleep have you lost?
I didn't really lose any much sleep, but it did make me like think about a lot of things. You know, just thinking about things like if something catastrophic was to happen. Am I prepared? Am I prepared to take care of my family? Things like that. I don't know. Just made me want to go buy a lot of canned food. That's all I knew.
And then turn those cans into rocket stoves.
Yeah, but what pick do you have for us this week?
Well, this week I have a super long book because I like super long books because I can just put it in my ear all day and not finish it. This week I am picking one from Neal Stephenson called Anathem. And it's really not one that is normally a category that I choose from. It's more of a fantasy book. And this one's a really tough one to tell you anything about without giving it away. But we'll just say that it follows the life of a young monk, essentially. His name is, Fra Orlo. And it's basically his adventures and his maturing through the trials that he has to deal with. And this was the first book that I was genuinely sad when it ended, not because of the story, but because I didn't want to leave the world that it was creating. It was wonderful.
You know, that's kind of how I feel every year when I watch Lord of the Rings. It's like I'll watch Lord of the Rings usually around Thanksgiving time because that's usually when they'll come on TV and I'll start watching it. And then I'll get to the first commercial and be like, nope. Stop, just start watching it on iTunes or something. And after watching it, and of course I've listened to the books too, it's like I'll just start going down like a Wikipedia rabbit hole of like looking up stuff about Lord of the Rings and Middle Earth and things like that. So I know what it's like to not want to leave a world behind.
Yeah, and this is a typical Neal Stephenson. He has created this whole other language that's in the book that you get to learn throughout because that's Neal Stephenson, that's what he does. But in also his fashion, it's so detailed about everything. I mean, you get to see this world in your mind because he is that detail oriented. I love it.
Yes, in fact, I'm actually picking a Neal Stephenson book too, that you actually recommended to me. Well, I actually picked this book up originally because I looked at the cover and it looked kind of cool. So I do judge a book by its cover, I guess.
We all do. It's okay.
And so I started listening. I was telling you, I was thinking about it. You're like, that's a good one. And so I'm picking Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson. And yes, I can attest to what you're saying about how detailed and wordy he is when it comes to things. Because that, too, is basically a 32-hour book. And it was really good. And I mean, it's I don't know if Anathem did it, but I mean, he knocks you basically – knocks your whole world upside down, like in the first 5 minutes of the whole book. I mean, it's just crazy what happens, and it's just a good book, good story. It's one of those things. It's like another one of those what if kind of things. I doubt what happened in that book will actually happen, at least in our lifetime. It's just one of those things that make you think, if something was to happen, are you prepared?
Yeah, and it's another one of those books that it's real hard to talk about without giving it away.
I know. It's just I don't really want to spoil anything,
like,
but it's
page
just,
two.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's fantastic, and just like he does a really good job in that book as far as like having and showing like humans' determination to overcome trials and tribulations and things like that. I do have some like criticism about that book. I felt like the second part of that book was a bit rushed, and almost wish he would have like broke it up into two books, and so that he could have spent a little bit more time on the second half. But I really enjoyed the first half more than the second half. So I kind of wish maybe he would have did that as two books, because it felt rushed going through it, at least the second part.
And the one I picked, Anathem, there's kind of a transition point in the book where it almost could be two different stories too. So I guess that might be just part of his writing style.
Maybe so. But you can get either of these titles or any other title from their extensive library for free with a 30-day free trial. Just visit audibletrial.com/educatingtech and get started today with your free trial and free audiobook. Our thanks to Audible for sponsoring our show. And while we're in the habit of talking about sponsoring, this is our 1-year anniversary, I guess you would say, our 1-year show. Now, granted, it's not number 52, it's number 34, but due to Tropical Storm Harvey and just some things that have come up here and there, we weren't able to, like, do a show every week. But we have decided that if you want to support us beyond just going to Audible and signing up there, we have created a Patreon page at patreon.com/educatingtech. The link will be in the show notes as well. And you could sign up to give us money, basically, if you want to support us in what we're doing and keep the lights on. I guess you can donate some spare change, however you want to do that. And Patreon is a pretty cool platform because we can put in like goals that we want to meet as far as financial goals, and then we can also offer rewards for people that decide to become patrons. And one of the things that you and I have talked about as far as offering a reward is that a lot of times that we talk about scripts and stuff that we use, PowerShell, different kinds of tools, we've decided that we are going to make available some of those things for people that decide to be our patrons. And so right now I just have it set that if you just donate $1 a month, you will have access to those resources. That may change later on if we start to add in a whole bunch of stuff or things that are just a little bit more dear to our heart. We may need to update that that goal amount. But right now, I think if you just sign up for which I think is the basic, the $1 a month plan. I didn't do the thing where you basically pay per episode because I don't like that model.
No, I don't either. And, well, yeah, that's just a weird model.
Yeah,
sometimes they pump out 10 episodes in a month, and some people pump out 2 in a month, and those kind of things.
Yeah, and I don't want any surprises. I don't want anybody to get any surprises. So I just went with the monthly thing, and we don't have a real high goal right now, but that may change as things progress. So that's what we're going to do. We'll also be able to do quote unquote super secret episodes and post them to the Patreon feed and messages and scripts and things like that. So, and that's something else that you get as far as with the patron I think goal reward thing.
Who knows? Maybe the running joke of Educating Tech After Dark is not so much a joke.
Yeah, maybe so. It's like, what happens when Matt hits stop on the recording? Well, now I can't hit stop. I've got to keep going until the conversation's actually over.
Well, sometimes, I'm going to go ahead and warn you, sometimes those conversations are very dangerous.
Yeah, they can be. I mean, but and sometimes they're pretty safe. Like this morning or this afternoon before we started talking, I was telling you about how I'm simplifying things in my life and going for experiences of platforms as opposed to convenient features of certain things and stuff like that. So, I mean, that may be some stuff people are interested in, and but we'll see. Yeah. I mean,
you're talking about mature things, and I'm talking about playing video games.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's but that's fine. but yeah, once again, that link will be in the show notes, patreon.com/educatingtech, if you like what we're doing and feel like supporting us. And we'll do the little shout out thing. We'll make sure that you're recognized and that we appreciate your support. And this is not something that, if it doesn't happen, we're going to stop doing our show. I mean, we like doing our show, but we just wanted to give our listeners an opportunity to support us if that's what they feel like they want to do.
Yeah, and a little benefit of thanking you for the support. We actually do put a lot of effort into the tools that we use in our districts, and they come in very handy at times. And a lot of the times, they're just mainly writing features that companies should have put in there from the beginning. So they come in really, really, really handy. Like the other day, I had to use one to change the local administrator passwords to different accounts on all the machines within the district. And, well, Microsoft took that feature away from a group policy, so got a PowerShell implementation of it.
Yeah, and it's just different things like that. And, you know, maybe later on down the line we could do some more rewards for higher paid tiers and, like, maybe offer up like some consulting services or something like that.
I don't know.
But because that's the thing with schools. Schools don't have a whole lot of money, so we got to help each other out. So we're willing to help and share whatever we need to do. But patreon.com/educatingtech. And this is really weird. I don't know if it's weird for you, but it's weird for me asking people for money. That's not something I really want to do. I mean, no. I don't need the money. I mean, we are okay as far as paying our bills and making sure the podcast is hosted somewhere, but I mean, just as a way that people can show support and maybe get some. I mean, we're gonna try our best to provide something, and you're not just paying to hear us yak about stuff for 30 to 45 minutes to an hour every week. We will try to provide some things that we like and use. With obviously, if it's something we can share, if it's something we can't share, we obviously maybe we could obscure some of the
we could maybe discuss how you could do that personally in your district and not post it publicly.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't know about you, but sometimes there's some scripts that I'm using that I don't want to share, and just
because, oh, like there's you some say, of them that I'm just like, downright embarrassed. They may work, but it's yeah, ugly.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I feel, like the way I deploy Sophos, like you were trying to do today,
which I'm still angry about.
It's okay. But I can't tell you how many text files I have in the C drive. Sophos installed, Sophos installed, migrated, Sophos installed, new. I can't tell you how many of those I have. And so some of those things, they may just, it's not that we don't want to share it. It just might just be a little bit too embarrassed to share it. That's just to say.
And but, you know what? And if those things you enjoy, why not? We all do it. Let's just admit to it.
But yeah, so patreon.com/educatingtech. I think I've said that like 15 times now. But yeah, so if you want to support us, that's a way you can do it. And if you don't, that's fine too. You can still hang around.
And just in case you missed it, that is patreon.com/educatingtech.
And if you want to try Audible, audibletrial.com/educatingtech. So that's two ways now that you can support our show. Very good. So a little bit of follow-up before we get into our quote-unquote one-year discussion. Really, the only thing I have is the 2018 update did get released this week on April 30th. The Windows 10 2018 April update or April 2018 update came out on the very last day of April. It will start, and that's only for like if you wanted to manually install it, which of course I did. And of course it broke everything. Like I had to go reinstall the RSAT tools and everything else.
Was Chrome still working for you?
Yeah, Chrome still worked okay for me. But, I mean, I'm on it, so.
You know, and it's very odd of me. I haven't forced this to install yet. I'm actually just waiting for it to drop.
I'm kind of interested to see, like, how long it takes before you actually get it. Because I really don't, I mean, I just let WSUS do its thing. I don't really pay too much attention to it. Usually, I tell when something rolled out because somebody will email me or put in a ticket saying their keyboard doesn't work. So, I know that the update rolled out and they just need to reboot to finish the install. So, that's usually how I know that things got rolled out. But, yes, it came out April 30th for you to manually install. And I think on May 8th, yes, the Windows 10 April 2018 update will roll out automatically on May 8th.
All right. More importantly, what starts on May 8th?
Google I/O.
Yes.
Because you already told me that like earlier today.
I am so excited about it, too.
We'll get Android P, which I guess P could stand for, I don't know, what's kind of some kind of dessert that starts with a P. Pecan pie?
Pastry?
I don't know. Eclair? Well, they already done a pastry, because didn't they do like an eclair?
Yeah, they did do eclair.
Eclair.
So maybe this will be, I can't even think of a candy that starts with a P.
Pixie sticks?
I don't know. Isn't that still Android popcorn.
Popcorn, there you go. I like popcorn.
I think popcorn would be a cool one.
But yeah, so, I mean, in more than likely your Android phone will not see it. So, but
no, I'm never going to see it on my phone. I've just come to accept that.
I mean, that's just sort of that's just one of the things that I just don't understand about Android. It's like every year they push out a new version of Android that 90% of their phones will not see.
Unless you buy that phone that year.
Yeah, I know. So that's just one of the things I don't understand. But it's to me, it's like the old Windows model. It's like because they have to support so many handsets, it's like they've ran into the Windows XP problem where they have so much driver compatibility and stuff like that that they have to build in that it's almost best just to not worry about it.
Well, last year when they released 8, they actually had a complete restructure of how the operating system works. So the vendor customization tools and the vendor customizations, everything they do in the OS, actually don't affect the underpinnings of the OS because they've actually got a separation layer now to where Google could update the underlying OS without affecting the vendor customizations. And if the vendor wanted to roll out their existing customizations on top of a new OS themselves, they could. And so hopefully the upgrade cycle could potentially be fixed. Lord, we hope, because Samsung doesn't have one.
Well, I hope you're right, because, I mean, a lot of times, I guess, vendors... My whole thing is, it's like, why does the vendors, and I guess it's because the Apple, like, held AT&T and Verizon hostage and told them that this is what they were doing if they wanted to have the iPhone. And I guess Google doesn't have the ability to do that, or the carriers had too much over Android to be able to do that. And so I'm wondering if, like, maybe this is, like, opening the door that maybe Google can actually push out the updates without needing the carriers' blessing, I guess, ahead of time.
Yeah, and the phone manufacturers for Android have to do so many different things to differentiate themselves, because Android is Android is Android. Why should I choose this vendor over this vendor? What do they do different?
Yeah, and so it's like all the phones got these different features and stuff like that.
Most are useless.
But I think, isn't that why Google also started using the Google Play Store to actually update their apps, like the
their
phone?
Core services. Because they used to be bundled with the OS.
And so when they broke those out, they were actually able to at least... I mean, you may not be able to update the Android, but at least maybe you can get any kind of like messaging updates or browser updates or something like that, just because they pushed those out from the Google Play Store. And, you know, that's something I wish Apple would do. I wish Apple didn't have to release a whole new version of iOS just to update Mail or something like that, or to add features to Mail.
And they don't have to. That's just what they're kind of choosing to do so far.
Yeah, but... It'll be interesting. All this to say that the April 2018 update is now live for Microsoft. And yeah, okay. So what we're going to talk about this week is last year when we started this whole thing, we basically just dove right in. And just kind of where we came from, episode one, we were talking about Windows 10S. You remember that? You remember that thing?
I do remember Windows 10S. Does Microsoft?
And apparently not, because within the past year, it looks like S has been demoted to just a mode of Windows 10 Pro. And
now
so,
it's just an SE mode.
Yeah, and so so that's kind of how far we've come within a year. But we didn't really talk about, like, us. And I know that's kind of weird to want to talk about ourselves, but usually that's, I guess, what some people do is they sort of introduce themselves, and we just sort of dove right in. And so what I wanted to kind of talk about today was, like, how we got into technology, and then how we got into, like, the education, and then maybe some of the biggest challenges that we've seen over the past year. So if you want to go first, you are more than welcome to.
How did I get to technology? How far back are we going with this?
Well, I mean, we can go all the way back as when I was 6 years old. I was sitting on the back step of my parents' house taking apart a VCR. I mean, we can go back that far.
Well, I won't go quite back that far. But I will give a shout out to one of my grandparents. They taught me DOS. My grandmother taught me DOS back in the day. And I wasn't that young. This was like the Wolfenstein 3D era, so it was the 90s. And that's really when I got into technology. She was a Star Trek fan and loved technology and just kind of spread it out through us. So that was initially where I got in. So, of course, like any kid of the 90s, I loved playing games. And, well, that was a technology outlet. That was basically what technology was back then, was gaming stuff. Computers were really expensive. And actually, I didn't get my first computer till I was in high school. I was a freshman in high school, and it was a Cyrix, if you even remember that brand, a Cyrix 90 megahertz.
I don't remember that brand at all.
Yeah, no one does. But IBM ended up scooping them up and then selling it off to VIA Technologies, and the VIA C7s are actually derivatives of the Cyrix from way back when. But yeah, you know me and CPUs, right?
Yeah, always.
But yeah,
I need a little bell every time you mention a CPU, a little ding.
Ding. Well, we don't need a telephone ringing, so that'd be what it got to. But that was where I got started in technology. And soon after that, I dove into the open source world of technology because I didn't have money. I was a kid. I didn't have a job. Well, I did have a job. I just didn't get paid to do that job. A family business, you don't get paid to do that.
Yeah. And
payment is roof and food.
Yep, I know the feeling.
Yeah, so I got into open source technology, and that was, man, it's kind of a bad word now. Caldera, Open Linux, is where I started with open source technology, which actually ended up becoming SCO. If anyone's kept up with the Linux drama over the years, SCO actually sued every Linux manufacturer on the planet, claiming they owned Linux and went to threaten them. Yeah, but that was where I got my start, was when Open Linux, and yeah, that was back in the day when nothing worked.
I think, I have a similar story, a little bit different. Of course, we did the Nintendo things and playing the video games. And the only access really to a computer that I had was my aunt had one that was running DOS. And I remember going to her house when we went for like holidays and stuff. And I would sit there and play like Mavis Beacon Teaches Typing on like this old DOS. And it's like, I didn't even know how to get into it. It's like, she said, go play the Mavis Beacon thing on the computer. And I'd go sit there for like 30 minutes before she came in there to check on me. It's like, I don't even know what to do. Because there was no GUI, there was nothing to click on. You had to like type in everything. I didn't really know. And so that was really like my first kind of experiences with a computer. And then like I remember my second one was playing Doom with a joystick on somebody's computer during a hurricane evacuation when we were pretty young. So that was kind of fun too. But we got our first computer. It was a Hewlett Packard, and we upgraded it to 32 megs of RAM. We upgraded it at the time. And so this was probably, I guess, late 90s, really late 90s, probably like 96. It came with Windows ME on it, if that tells you anything.
Ooh. So oh, you're 90, you're 98.
Yeah. 99. So it didn't even.
You're 99.
Yeah. So it had Windows ME. And what kind of like sparked my whole interest in like working on computers was that I broke
Besides the fact that you had to all the time because you were running Windows ME.
Yeah, and it was because I broke it the very first day. I broke the whole thing the very first day. And what I tried to do was I tried to play this game that it came with. It was called VR Soccer. And so I was trying to install this game that the thing came with. So you'd think, hey, it'll work. I ended up having it. My mom basically said, you need to fix this or you're going to buy it. And like you said, computers are not cheap. And so I basically, this, I guess I was 15, 13, 14, 15 years old at the time, on the phone with Hewlett Packard at like 10 o'clock at night, trying to get this thing back up and going. And with their help, I was able to do it. And so I threw that VR soccer game away so that I didn't ever try to load it again. really wanted to play it. I mean, because I don't know how much VR was going to be in this computer.
We need to go to archive.org and see if we can recreate that experience for you.
No, I don't want to do that. Of course, we did the computers in the school. I remember playing like Super Bunny on the old Apple IIs and things like that, or maybe the Apple Class II. I don't remember what they were, 2Es, I think, maybe.
Yeah, they had a couple different models just for education.
Yeah, and so I remember doing that, but I mean, it was. But it really was, you just went in there and you stuck in that big old floppy disk and did whatever you needed to do. But fixing the computer, I was like, I kind of like this. I kind of like enjoying this. And then I actually bought my own machine in 2002. After graduation, I used my graduation money because, I mean, you're going to college, you need a computer anyway. But the underlying reason why I bought that computer is because I wanted to play Grand Theft Auto 3. But and the old Windows ME computer, which I did upgrade to Windows XP, just wasn't cutting it. So I had to actually get me a new machine. And I upgraded that thing here and there, added new graphics cards in it back when they were doing the AGP.
Yeah, accelerated graphics port.
Yeah, using those. And so I think I had one that had like 512 megabytes of memory. This NVIDIA card.
I'm going to date myself. My first video card was actually a Trident with 2 megabytes.
That's really old.
Yeah, and this is something. If my family ever listens to me, they're going to be mad because now they're going to know why that Cyrix 90 broke and we had to get a new one. Did you know that a Sega Genesis cartridge pinout fits on a 8-bit ISA slot?
No, I did not.
Did you know that if you plug one of those into it and push the power button, it will fry everything?
Well, I do know now.
Yeah, that's how I got my second computer.
But that's okay. So I went to college, and I was going for computer science because I thought that's just what you did whenever you went to college for computer stuff, was you just do computer science. And I got to a class called discrete math, and I was like, this is not for me. I cannot do – math is like one of my least favorite things in the world. And so I found out that they actually had a program that was basically like networking, computer repair, things like that. And so that's what I switched to and just really haven't looked back since. So that's very sort cool. of how I got into the technology space. Just I screwed something up and had to fix it. And I talked to like the guidance counselor at Lamar and says, well, do you want a program? And I was like, well, really? It's like I'm happiest when I'm tearing the thing apart and doing things inside of it as opposed to writing things for it. And so now come full circle, I'd rather be writing things for networks, yeah. Which is, but
it happens.
Than working on computers. But yeah, that was just how I got into it, and it's been interesting to say the least. A lot of it, I mean, I'm not trying to brag or toot my own little trumpet or whatever, but a lot of what I saw, I didn't really learn in college, and I just sort of had to just learn on my own and learn as I go. I learned a lot of things in college, but I had to learn a lot of stuff on my own. And I knew a lot even going into college. It's like there were some classes the professor was like, why didn't you test out of this? And like, I didn't know I could.
Yeah, there was I went to LIT for my stuff, Lamar Institute of Technology. And there was one course that I literally showed up the first day and said, hey, man, look, when are we going to do the test? And can I just come then, please? And he was like, okay. So I literally showed up the first and last day of that course. It was an intro to operating systems.
Mine was like Word and spreadsheets and things like that. But me and the professor sort of have an arrangement. I just sort of sat in the back of the class, did my thing, did the work. Everything was good.
So, how did you get into education?
Well, I started, after I graduated from college, I went to work at a shipyard, and I was basically doing the tech work for this little shipyard, and that didn't, well, you know how shipyard work can be. It's like it's blowing and going for a few years, and then everything just sort of dies down. I have to let everybody go. And so I was actually unemployed at the time, and I was still looking for a job, and basically gave myself like 2 months. It's like, hey, you can have 2 months to find another technology job, or you're going to work at Home Depot. And I was literally like a few days away from putting in my application at like Home Depot to go find a job. And I found an opening at the service center in Beaumont, and I applied for it. And luckily, somehow I managed to swindle my way into that position. And that's sort of how I got into education. It was like, well, okay, I'll give this a shot. How bad could it be? And now I don't think there's anywhere else I'd almost rather be. I mean, other than education. I mean, sure, I'd like more money, but I mean, who wouldn't? But
yeah, but I have a very similar story.
Like what I do and where I do it. And so, I mean, yeah, it almost feels like the work that I'm doing in technology is actually may, and it sounds kind of cliche, but it might actually be making a difference in somebody's life.
Yeah, that's cool. And mine's very similar. My wife is an education major too. In fact, nobody knows this, but my wife and your wife were friends in college.
Yeah, they sure were.
I didn't know who you were, though. And so she was going for teaching and whatnot, and she was always perusing the job postings in the area for positions for everything. And she came across one for technology. And I was actually an assistant manager for Office Depot at the time. I'd already finished my degree and whatnot, and was still just working there because it was a very good paying job, but it wasn't in what I wanted to do. Yeah. And she found a job posting for Region 5 Education Service Center.
Hey, go figure.
And I know. It was in Kyle Fisher. Credit to him. He gave me a shot when I had not had any technology positions on my resume before, except for when I was in high school and I worked for an ISP doing their hardware support. But, yeah, and he hired me, and I was there for quite some time. That's how I got an education. And, yeah, you get exposed to a ton of different stuff working at the service center. I don't think people give them enough credit for the stuff that they actually have to deal with, because everyone's system is different. And you were there. You got to the trial by fires.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it was a very big learning experience. And it sets you up for success when you move on. And, you know, you get to those points where, you know, it's just time to move on. And actually you leaving was probably the best thing for me, because I got to do everything basically that you were doing, and I had to go through your trial of fire on top of my trial of fire. But yeah, it was good. It set me up for success here, and it was sort of like it was basically time for me to do the same thing to somebody else. I have a habit of just doing things on my own and not. If I don't work well with others, didn't learn that in kindergarten very well.
Just give me my lie. Toy.
Yeah. And so it was just best that if other people were going to succeed, it may have been, it was, I think it was time for me to move on to something else. And so that's what I did. And, that's up to them or not, whether they're succeeding. And, I came here to the school district, and it's interesting to see both sides of everything. And as much as we were exposed to working at the service center, it wasn't near enough working from the district side, because I had zero experience with a Chromebook whenever I started this job. I knew what one was, but I didn't even know how to enroll one into Google. And so that's, it had its own challenges moving over to the actual school district side. So, but yeah, I mean, I like what I do and where I do it, and plan on keeping on doing it. I mean, our podcast wouldn't too. Make any sense if we moved on to something else, right?
You're right. I mean, we couldn't be like educating oil field.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense at that point. But so, no, I've really enjoyed education over the past. Gosh, I'm getting old. It's been a long time.
And you actually have some experience too from the university side of it too, because you
worked
at,
when I left,
you know,
the service
Lamar.
Center, I went to Lamar University, and it was a pretty extensive network. We had three data centers and whatnot in a couple different locations, and that was a great learning experience for me. I worked with a good team of guys, and they actually are still there, and Yeah, it was just good. I wasn't there very long. I was only there a year. Actually, I started January 1st, and my last day was December 31st.
Hey, there you go.
So 2012, I was Lamar.
Yeah, there you go. So as we wrap this this up, so what are mine's going to be a pretty easy answer to this question.
No, I know what yours is.
what do you think has been your biggest challenge for your school this year? And while you think about it, I'll go ahead and say mine because I know mine. Obviously, dealing with Tropical Storm Harvey and everything that caused us as far as we had to go back to the old Region 5 motto of just make it work. And just the things that we've had to do as far as like setting people up in hallways and foyers and getting this to work and that to work in different environments and just those kinds of things and the challenges that presents. And so that's been and now we're going to start dealing with reconstruction this summer. And so that's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. But hopefully this time next year my world might be a little bit back to normal when it comes to life at the school. What do you think you have as far as biggest challenges?
Challenges we've had this year. We moved junior highs this year, so all of our junior high teachers and students and that equipment and whatnot was moved facilities, and we rolled out a 1-to-1 program here at high school this year, and then on top of all that, I decided, you know what? I'm going to throw my hat into teaching. I'm going to teach a class. And that has actually been my biggest challenge this year is structured learning. I may work in education, but I am not a teacher. And
I understand.
I have learned that hard this year.
Yeah.
I will not be making that mistake again, but I have so much respect for those teaching positions now because I had a really fantastic group of students. And I struggled every day. So having only had 7, and you'd think that would be easy, but it was not. I can't imagine those teachers that have 250.
You know, but I think if you were to do it again next year, I think it might be a little bit easier because you have what you did this year done. And so a lot of times that you could repeat if you're teaching the same class and nothing really major changes, you can reuse a lot of the stuff that you created for the class this year. And so you might not be as stressed as far as like coming up for the, coming up with things to teach every day. Because I mean, you were basically teaching a class that I took in college and, I know
I tried to shoehorn 4 years of college class in a single high school year.
And not only that, what I can tell is like college semesters are always considerably shorter than high school semesters, and so you were cramming 4 years of stuff in 1 year, but you were also trying to make let's just hypothetically say 3/4 of a year worth of stuff fit into a full year. I mean it's a lot. I mean it really does present some challenges, but.
And it didn't help the students that I am ADD, so when they chased a squirrel, by golly, I was right there with them.
And also maybe the time of day that it was. I mean, it may have been a little bit better for you if it was like first thing or very last thing.
Yeah,
it always seemed like it was right in the middle of when something catastrophic was going on, like a stag rebooting itself, that you had to go to class.
And I have some students that are upset with me because I'm not doing it next year. But maybe the next year I will. I just need a year off to make up for those things that I didn't get around to this year.
Yeah, I understand. And it's like we know plenty of people that you start with one class and then before you know it, you're teaching 4 classes. And so we know plenty of people that have been in that situation.
Shout out to Spencer there.
Yeah, and Spurger.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we just wanted to kind of catch up. Well, we talk every week, but and every day, basically, me and you. But kind of like catch up is like where we've come from and like how we got our start, because we really didn't do that. We just sort of jumped right in. But that'll be our show this week. For show notes or whatever, you can go to educatingtech.net/34 for the number. To send us your feedback at educatingtech on Twitter or send an email to educatingtech@gmail.com. To find more of what Chris is up to, still waiting on a video about a computer box built out of wood, you can follow him at Feeks. and see like what when he's gonna release something. Every time last night he was talking about something about Linux doing something. So, so it's always interesting with Chris Squirrel. On Twitter. Yeah, Squirrel. And if you want to follow me, I'm at Twist of Matt. I'm just watching TV or movies or whatever. So there's that. But also just remember patreon.com/educatingtech if you want to support us. And also thanks again to Audible for sponsoring us at audibletrial.com/educatingtech. And that's it. We'll see you next week. See you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.